Greetings. This is Winston Giesecke. I wrote this episode, episode number 6, season 2, which is called Nothing Takes the Past Away Like the Future. I learned recently that this is so far the longest wildfire title in the series history. The title actually came from a Madonna song that kept running through my head when I was writing the outline for this episode. Because a big theme of the series has been the exploration of people's pasts, and Chris's past, and the Ritter family past, and the Davis past, and I thought that we might want to get away from the past and sort of show people altering their future a little bit through their actions, which they are responsible for and working to do. So here we have the exciting title sequence with this great song that I don't know the words of, or I would sing along. Our very handsome and exciting cast, all of whom do a terrific job. So we pick up with Pablo returning after a 2-episode absence. Originally, there was a subplot at the end of episode 4, 2 episodes ago, where Pablo, at the very end, gets into a car with a shady character from his past and is gone for several weeks, and now he returns and nobody knows where he was. That ended up getting cut out of that episode due to time constraints, I believe. Now we just explained that he was off horse shopping. And here we have Half-Naked Junior being greeted by his sister Danny when she shows up at his loft. The point of this scene originally was to show that since Junior has moved out of the Davis family, that Danny misses him as much as they had a tendency to bicker or fight when they lived under the same roof. She's actually kind of lonely and longing for a little contact with her brother. Originally, she showed up like gangbusters and demanded that he have lunch with her, and he said he didn't have time because he had to go to work, and she said dinner, and the conversation gets on to his love interest, Rebecca. And a lot of that just got shortened, and so this is how the scene turned out, and it's just as effective as it was when I originally wrote it. You need to be warned. Of course, Danny's secretly glad that, not so secretly glad that he's no longer with Chris. Yet. And now, of course, we have the infamous Bentley driving up with Junior's long-lost mother, who we met in the finale of season 1. She basically showed up after a long, exhausting search that Danny had done, but now that she's gotten to know her son, she's actually starting to like him, and at the end of the scene, she refers to him as our son. Oh, right there, she did. And, of course, Mr. Davis doesn't like that. So she has demanded $500,000, which originally, I believe, was $30,000, and then it became $100,000, and somehow it got blown up to $500,000, which is a lot of money to give your former wife when she shows up 20 years later. But, you know, he's trying to buy her disappearance is his ultimate goal, so he can win his son back, because he sees her as being in the way of his son, which is not really true. And this is Whittakus, the horse, which was originally called Solomon's Mine in the first draft. I don't know how I thought of that name, Solomon's Mine, but I liked it because it was sort of long and clunky. But unfortunately, it did not clear. Perhaps there was already a horse with that name, so we had to change it. And we went through several different names, Django Boy among them, and I don't remember some of the other ones before we came up with Witticus, which is actually the college nickname of our very hardworking script coordinator, Mr. Stephen White. So when his friends watch this, they will be surprised to see the horse named after him. This scene was originally much, much longer, and it basically got shortened just into that kiss, which conveyed the same material that was originally in the scene, which was kind of dialogue-heavy, and there's a lot of further scenes coming up with Junior and Rebecca, so it seemed wise to sort of get right to the point and move on. So Pete shows up to go through a box of photos, which apparently they never divided up when they split. The idea of this scene actually was conceived for an earlier episode this season, but it ended up not going into it, and I resurrected it for this because I thought it was a nice way to explore Gene's past as well as Gene's future. And, of course, Pete being from her past, and now she's dating Charlie. She'll always have a soft spot for Pete, I believe. And, of course, Danny wants Matt to be her full-time trainer, but he feels the conflict with his family's ranch, so he's hesitant. Medical and dental was the original line. I don't know. Somehow that the dental got dropped, but it works very well. He looks really cold, doesn't he? Not emotionally cold, I mean like physically cold. He looks like he's a little chilly there. He knows it, and we know it. It's a tough decision for Matt. And Pablo shows up at his quarters on the ranch. And there's a mysterious person sitting there. This is Reuben, someone from Pablo's past, whose name was originally Lyle when we first came up with it. And it somehow became Reuben, although I don't know if this actor is Latin or not, but it still works. He does a great job. We learn that Reuben is from Pablo's past, and he's throwing out some hints about what that is. I believe the idea of Pablo having a secret was actually in the original pilot, and we have wanted to explore what that secret is for some time, and there was talk of doing it in season one, and it didn't happen, so this seemed like the right time, in the middle of season two, to finally delve into Pablo's past, because, of course, Greg Serrano is a fantastic actor, and capable of doing a lot, so we wanted to give him a nice meaty episode to sink his teeth into. So we don't actually learn here what the secret is from Pablo's past, but we do find out about this mysterious John Zack character, and we learn that Witticus is part of Ruben's plan here. The original concept of this episode was going to be much, much darker. It was going to involve a whole sort of mob arena and, you know, have more violence. We originally conceived a fire on the ranch as a warning. Mysterious people show up and set one of the buildings on fire. It was very exciting, and there was going to be a, you know, possible murder, and it just wasn't our show. So we saw that fight scene, and now Chris is inquiring about what's going on with Pablo. And of course, he's reluctant to tell her because Pablo likes to keep everything inside, and he's a man of few words. But Chris isn't going to take no for an answer this time around, which is part of the Chris story here, is that she actually begins to challenge her trainer, her mentor, which she hasn't really done up until this point, so it gives her a new dimension. Here we have more exploration of the past. Pete going through a box of old things where he finds a bottle of champagne, which is obviously bringing back some happy memories for him. And he wants to share those memories with Jean, so he leaves it on the counter. The scene was originally set in the barn. It got moved to the house because of location concerns, and it's easier to shoot on the soundstage than it is to shoot on the barn. In the barn, I guess. So now he's concerned that the horse that Jean left on has come back without Jean. So he's obviously a very good horseman, so he jumps right on and takes off searching for her. Here we have an emotional scene with Junior and his mother. He wants to pay her back, which is a nice moment for Junior, because up until this season, he was sort of the rich kid who got everything he wanted, and this season is very much about Junior wanting to make his own mistakes, make his own way in life, and, you know, earn things, which is a nice thing to see. And here she announces that she's leaving. She has a villa in Italy, and suddenly she has guests coming, and she has to take off. And she says she's going to come back, although she's not really convincing when she says she is, so we don't know if she's coming back or not. Of course, Junior hopes that she is, because he's sort of enjoying having a mother, which I think took him by surprise, because when Danny was searching for what she thought was their mother, Junior wasn't really into it. And, of course, Danny's search turned up Junior's mother, and the secret that Junior and Danny had different mothers. So Danny is still, you know, mother-free, and now Junior has this mother that he didn't realize how much he wanted. There was a lot of footage in the dailies of somebody on an ATV sort of swirling around this area, and I guess it got lost on the cutting room floor in order to make the episode come in at the right time. That was the explanation for Jean not being on the horse anymore. Another explanation, the one in the script actually, was that she sees some litter on the ground and she bends down to pick it up and the horse takes off without her. And the ATV was a little more visually stimulating, so they put that in there, and then ultimately it seems it was cut out. Part of Jean's story is the concept of her moving on romantically, and even though she and Pete have been divorced for several years now, you know, there's always that question lingering, and is that the right choice? You know, should we have stayed together? Could we have worked it out? And I think in this episode, she ultimately realizes what that answer is. So she's a little romantic here with Pete. He rescued her. They're talking about how they're friends. I like this scene because they've had a lot of tension, the two of them. And they're starting to sort of find their place with one another. And he says, we're friends, and a lot of people wouldn't be that lucky. So that's nice. We see here that she's having some thoughts, but they're quickly interrupted by Pablo and Chris. So Pablo makes up an excuse as to why he's bruised, and Jean has no reason to doubt him, but Chris does. If you look at her face there, she's... See, and she's standing up to Pablo. She's questioning him, and he's not having it. As I said earlier, this episode was originally conceived a lot darker, and it went through several different incarnations before it reached this one. Ultimately, like I said, it just wasn't our show to suddenly turn it into a mystery, but it seemed that Pablo's past would sort of be mysterious and might have some violence, and, you know, because he's a guy from the streets, the same way Chris is, and he had done some incarceration. I love that he hands her a magazine and she says Italian Vogue, but it clearly isn't Italian Vogue. I don't know if they actually cleared Italian Vogue to show or not. That may be the reason for it. That line, I hate speaking French. Madeleine Albright, who is that? I don't know who that is either. I don't know how I came up with that. See, he's nervous because Danny clearly didn't like his last girlfriend and did not treat her well, so he really wants Danny to get along with Rebecca. And here we have a mysterious-looking thug. And Pablo clearly knows who this is. And it's Mr. John Zack. This actor I was not familiar with, but he did a really great job. Not being too over-the-top menacing, but yet being friendly and a little menacing. Yeah, Ruben. And remember, we saw Ruben get in his car and drive away, but Mr. Zack here is going to suggest that Ruben may not have made it back in one piece. But of course, we saw him drive away, so if anything happens to Ruben, it's not Pablo's fault. He's going to try to convince Pablo to fix Whittakus, because Whittakus was a successful thoroughbred, and now he's got a problem, and he's not been doing well, and they don't know why, and this horse has been sold a bunch of times, and they've just invested their money, so they want to get their money's worth, so they want Pablo to fix him and find out what's wrong with him. See, this is the kind of scene that Pablo needed to have, because we knew there was something lurking there in his past, and we didn't know what it was. So in this episode, everybody has their own internal conflict, which is a great theme to have on any dramatic television show. The big conflict, of course, is Pablo and his future. What is he going to do? You know, someone has come in and invaded his nice setup he's got and actually may have something on Pablo, which makes it very difficult for Pablo to say no. Do you believe him? This scene is pretty much as it was written, I believe. Not much of the Pablo-John Zack conversations changed too much over the draft. I think a lot of the Chris involvement sort of changed. It came and went, and how much is she going to challenge Pablo? And, you know, because there's a fine line between having her question her boss, essentially, and having her be a big pain in the neck. And I think we achieved that balance here, but it went through several different tries to get it right. I like the big thug there. I just think he's very scary. So Chris really wants to fix Whittakus. You know, she sees him as another Wildfire, because Wildfire, of course, came from a non-racing background, and they've turned him into this amazing horse race. And I think she sees that Whittakus can be rehabilitated and continue to be a great horse race. So they were trying to pull a fast one here and sneak him out behind Pablo's back, because last we heard, Pablo didn't want them to have anything to do with the horse. But now he's had a sudden and inexplicable change of heart, which, as we saw from that look in Chris's eyes, she was questioning. But he clearly does not want to be ridden, Whittakus. So that's the first step in them trying to figure out what his problem is. So Pete is going to go back to see his mother and leave Junior to fix all of these club concerns. But first he needs Pete to look at his car. Heinous. That is one of my favorite words, and I'm glad that I was able to use that here. I don't think it's a word that Junior has used up till now, but, you know, as Junior's life expands, his vocabulary expands as well. And here's his dad. I like the composition here, how Junior is framed between his real father, who he isn't getting along with or agreeing with, and his sort of surrogate father, Pete, who is sort of looking out for him, and they're working together. It's a great visual. But of course, Davis has the wrong approach here, because he's still coming from a money standpoint. You know, I'll give you money if you come home, and of course, money is the big problem. Junior wants to be on his own, and he doesn't want his dad to bail him out. Although his mother just bailed him out a couple scenes back, but he's going to reimburse her. Yeah, that was a great, great little bit here. And of course, both of these actors are wonderful in this. Now, if you look close, on one of these close-ups of the computer screen, there is a typo. I believe the word business is misspelled on one of them, and I don't know if I noticed it, and maybe you will too. Business, right there. But at least John Zack is spelled correctly, which is nice. This scene was actually a last-minute addition to clarify the story and explain why Chris is so concerned about this person from Pablo's past. So, obviously, when a scene comes in at the last minute, the art department has to scramble to create these screens, and they did a really wonderful job here, but unfortunately, that misspelling slipped through. It happens. And now we come in at Act 4 out of 5. So Chris has learned that this John Zack character who runs the syndicate that owns Whittakus is a bad guy. So she is confronting Pablo to see if he knows. And of course he does. And this is a nice way to make Chris active in the story because it's kind of a story about Pablo and his past and, you know, how he deals with it. But Chris is the main character of the show, so it's nice that she can be involved in this and work with Pablo. And actually, the roles are sort of changed here because in the first season, Pablo was always that sounding board to Chris and, you know, your past is your past and you can redeem yourself and, you know, I don't judge you. And so now she's saying those same things to him. So it's nice to have her be able to return the favor to Pablo. His big concern, of course, is that bad guys will come onto the ranch and make trouble for the Ritter family, which is the last thing he wants. Whether or not Zack will stay true with his promise remains to be seen. So now Chris knows everything, and he's trusting her, and ultimately what he wants her to do is just to work with the horse so they can get him up and running and get him out and move on and get back to Wildfire. But Chris is left concerned and worried. This was a great scene. This scene was originally in the club, and it got moved to the car, which works really well because it's a nice sort of variety here we get between the two of them. I didn't think that line would actually make it in, but it did, unless she's sleeping with one of the players. She hates vegetables. The whole Rebecca fascinated by criminology thing is a personal favorite of mine because I am personally fascinated by criminology. the psychology of it and the social aspects of it, not the gore of it or any of the evil of it. Serial killers, and there's actually a line where Danny mentions the Zodiac Killer, and I wrote this episode shortly after coming back from a week in Hawaii where I laid in the sun and read a book about the Zodiac Killer. So that was sort of on my mind, and that was the one line in the entire script where Danny says, mentions the Zodiac Killer, the one line that I was hoping wouldn't get cut out. Anything else, you know, as close as you are to the material and as much as, you know, it's important to you, you realize that things get changed, things get dropped, things get cut, and that was the one line that I wanted to remain in, and I'm pleased to say that it did. This does not in any way condone the Zodiac Killer. It's just an interesting topic. Make it happen, he says. Soon. He's putting the pressure on. And of course, there's a little tension between Matt and Pablo, because Matt has shown himself to be a more than apt trainer, and he doesn't want to go work for Danny because of the complications it will bring about, so he's, you know, at home and doesn't really want to be second banana. This scene went back and forth as to who was going to suggest that they drink the champagne. It was never a question that they were going to drink it in the various drafts, but as to whose idea it was, I sort of ended up liking the idea of it being Pete's suggestion, but there was a time when I thought Gene might make a bold move and just say, hey, let's drink the champagne. But I think it works very well the way it came out. The chiropractor remained from the very first concept of this episode. Yeah, this is great. And this is going to be... She's on her way out, and he doesn't realize that yet, but she knows it. Right, she's putting the blame on Danny. Is she really going to Italy? Do we know? I'll never tell. Just have to wait and see. But she's not putting up with any of Davis's grief there. She obviously is in the power position because she just walked away with $500,000 of his money. So what does she care? This was a longer scene, more technical, and I think ultimately it wasn't necessary. There was a scene where we learned that the horse fell in the starting gate in a race, and it was a well-covered race, and that was originally what Chris was going to uncover on the internet. Instead of the John Zack bad guy stuff, she was going to learn history about Whittacus's fall, and it made more sense to just sort of move on and get right to the meat of the story, and it didn't really matter how he got the injury, he just did. I love those menus. I think those stripes are really groovy. He's stuck at Raintree. Matt was originally in this scene, and it seemed easier just to make it the three of them, to put the focus on mostly Danny and Rebecca and how they get along, and Junior's just sort of sitting there gritting his teeth hoping that it doesn't turn out heinous. Punked. I love that line. That's a reference to the Ashton Kutcher show, of course. You're crazy. You're a complete loser, I think, was the original line, and you're crazy. It's just as good. It's less of a mouthful. And I love her reaction here, Nicole's, Danny's, because you don't know if she's going to fly off the handle and freak out, or... And ultimately she doesn't, and she just does that so well, and it's amazing. Originally there were two scenes in the restaurant like that, of them sort of trying to get to know each other and walking on eggshells, and it ended up getting condensed into the one scene, and then we simply have the follow-up scene, which we'll see in a minute here. She tells him about watching Todd do karate. And of course, he's surprised because she's an overprotective mother when it comes to Todd and doesn't like to put Todd in situations where he could get hurt. But of course, she has to let go and let him live his own life at some point, and she's working on that. That's part of Jean's arc and part of her growth as a character. And of course, Nana is wonderful here, and so is Mr. Joe Lando. That is dirty. I can't believe they showed that. So now we come back, and here comes my favorite line about the Zodiac Killer. She's not giving away too much. She likes her, but she's not going to rave about her. So that worked out really well. Yeah, that's a big fat lie, because she does, because Danny is trouble. She doesn't like sharing her brother with other women. But, you know, she's growing too, and she approves of Rebecca, or so it seems. And of course, Jean is feeling terrible about what happened after the champagne. I think they drank another bottle of wine after the champagne. That was originally in the script, and I think that was dropped at some point. Chris gets involved by her own choice. She has internal conflict here because she doesn't want Pablo to get hurt, but she also wants to do the right thing by the ranch. And the right thing by this horse, because she knows that that's important. So they're going to demonstrate Whittacus' progress, even though he is not quite ready to be ridden or raced, but they have to do it. So hopefully it will turn out okay. And Chris gives a concerned glance over there toward Mr. Zach. You always have to limit the number of days that you can shoot outside because the time of year when this episode was shot, it was getting cold there. And they have to schedule all of the locations so they can maximize and get it in the number of days allotted for the shooting. And that's why a lot of times scenes get moved from one location to another. You know, it was originally on the ranch, but it got moved to the house because that's on the stage, which is the easiest place to shoot. Because you can control the lighting conditions, whereas when you're shooting outside like here, you're sort of bound by the sun and what the sun's going to do. And then, of course, you have to make all the different pieces of film match, which they do an amazing job of, because each angle is shot at a different time of day, and it all looks the same. Here, Matt thinks that Pablo is taking credit for what was essentially his idea, was getting the chiropractor out there, and he's not happy. But what Matt doesn't realize is that Pablo is doing it just to not get John Zack interested in Matt's training abilities. And I think he was successful there. But of course, Matt's not happy, and he's going to rethink his position there at the ranch. So that's part of Matt's story. He's going to try to change his future. Savor the moment. So Pablo wants nothing more to do with this guy, and take your horse and leave us alone. And of course, Matt is very unhappy. And Chris knows why, but she can't tell Matt. So she's conflicted there. Yeah, he's going to do something drastic here. And then we get Jean feeling terrible about what happened between her and Pete. And he's a little lovey-dovey here, thinking maybe that that was his, you know, road back to the family. Because I think ultimately what Pete wanted was to have his family back. Unfortunately, it seems that this is not what's going to happen. Because Gene is already dating someone else, Charlie, who is not in this episode, but, you know, they're still together, and she made a mistake, and she's being very honest with him, telling him that. So she's moving on. Nothing is taking her past away like her future. To work that in again. Her shirt kind of looks like the stripes on those menus we saw earlier. Wonder if that was intentional. Probably not. She's not really saying if that's what she wants. What she's saying is that that's what's going to happen. That's the smartest choice. And I think part of the beauty of her performance here is that you see what a difficult choice that is. You know, she's doing the right thing, but does she have feelings for Pete? Yeah, of course she does. You know, he's the father of her children. So here we have Mr. Davis writing Junior a letter. That was something that I threw in the very first draft thinking it would be cut out, because obviously writing a letter is not a very visual way to tell a story. And I sort of threw it in as a placeholder, thinking that I would come up with something better later, and everybody liked it, so it stayed in. Which surprised me, because at the end, when you actually hear the contents of the letter, it's sort of done in a montage format, which is a really popular way to pass time and convey information, but not always the most interesting. She looks very cold there. Both of them do. But they're doing a really good job of not trying to seem cold. So that's a very sneaky move on her part. And I like how pleasant Rebecca is to Isabel here, even though she clearly doesn't like her, as we learned in the dinner scene earlier. So just the urgency that she's showing about, she can't wait to rip open this letter. It's great. Although reading while you're driving is not always a safe thing to do, and I don't recommend that for anybody out there, especially if you have a really expensive car like she does. So here we get that montage I was referring to. And it's a tragedy that he's sort of poured his heart out for the first time. Mr. Davis and Junior never received the letter. So here he is waiting at the country club for Junior to show up, and feeling like Junior doesn't want to see him. Which he doesn't, but would he have shown up if he had gotten the letter? We don't know. I like to think he would have, but I'm an optimistic sort. He probably wouldn't have. But we'll never know, because she's tearing it up. Because she's evil. Here we are back at Pablo's quarters, and he's saying we're done with this, and we're moving on, and she's concerned about Matt, and Pablo isn't. He'd rather just sweep it under the rug and let Matt's feathers be ruffled, but little does he know that Matt is going to leave the ranch, as we learn in this scene. This scene actually had a different ending. As originally conceived, they sort of came to an agreement, and the way it ended up here, which I think works very well, Jean doesn't seem happy about it, but she doesn't stop him. And I think that's a very real conflict that Matt's mother would be having at this moment, because he's telling her that there's no room for him on the family farm with what he wants to do, so he's going to go find a place where there is room for him. And I think that's the choice I would make, but obviously his mother isn't happy about it. Does it feel right to you? And he says yes. And originally she said, then I think you should go for it. But I think the reaction that she gives there is great. this is what we call the Fatal Attraction moment, inspired by the scene in Fatal Attraction when Michael Douglas comes home and sees his wife talking to a woman who we later find out is, you know, the woman he's trying to avoid. So Pablo, thinking that everything is done, comes into the living room and sees Jean talking to Mr. Zach. And of course, she's trying to drum up more business and telling him to send more horses her way, which of course is the last thing Pablo wants to hear. But she's innocent. She doesn't know what's going on. She just is trying to keep her stable going. Yeah, I don't think Mr. Zach is going to honor that deal. See? Here we learn about Pablo's secret. He says that Ruben vanished, but of course we know that he didn't. We saw him get in the car and leave, which means if there's any foul play, it's probably on Mr. Zach's part. They also did a really great job, the makeup department, of lessening Pablo's bruise, because in story time, that was several days ago, and the bruise looks appropriately healed, which I think is a really hard thing to do, to make that look real, because everything is shot out of sequence, so kudos to the makeup department there. And of course, we go out on Chris here, because she's the main character, and she's concerned. What's going to happen? And you'll have to keep watching and find out. So, thank you so much for listening, and go Wildfire.